This is Turn It On.
Guys and gals, and welcome to episode 41 of Turn It On. My name is Michael J, and you have found my podcast. Congratulations. My friend Chris Nix is back on the program today, and this is his third time on the show, so it's a Chris Nix three-peat, if you will. Chris was the very first guest on episode one way back in 2015 when I started the show, and since that time, he's contributed his guitar wizardry to everyone from Jody Messina to Tonic, and he's currently the guitar player for Jonathan Davis of Korn's solo venture called Jonathan Davis and the Ministry. And Chris and I met way back in the very early 2000s and played in a band together for a solid 10 years or more when we were both living in Gainesville, Florida, and he continues to be one of my best friends, and it's been very exciting for me to watch the rest of the world slowly discover the talent and guitar mastery that I've known since day one. And before we get to my talk with Chris, though, it's time for everyone's favorite segment, something I call
Stories from the Road.
That is the somewhat divisive jingle for Stories from the Road. Most people love it, but there's a few here and there that don't, and that's okay with me. You're entitled to your opinions, even if they're wrong. And before I get to today's story, I will say this. I'm eventually going to run out of stories from the road. So I'll ask you, if you're a musician or entertainer, or if you have any of your own interesting rock and roll war stories that you'd like people to hear, please send them to me. You can email me at mj@tiopod.com, or you can get in touch with me on the contact page of our website, tiopod.com, and I'll read them. They can be funny, they can be scary, whatever, your choice. So start sending those in and I'll read them out because I'm incredibly cool. All right, today's story comes to you from when I was doing solo acoustic gigs all over the state of Florida to support myself in the not-so-distant past. And this is every entertainer's nightmare, the aggressive heckler. Now, I'll tell you that I've dealt with almost every manner and type of heckler in my illustrious career, and it's never been a pleasant experience, and it would almost ruin my entire day and sometimes entire months of my life. I would really let it get to me. On this particular night, however, I did win the day. I held a regular gig in Jacksonville, Florida at a place called the Mellow Mushroom, which is a chain restaurant that's still in existence today. You can find them in a lot of places in America. I used to play on their patio for half-price wine night. Glamorous, I know. The clientele there was a really weird mixture of rich college-age kids, very southern blue-collar working people, and an almost inner-city type of rough crowd. And you'd think that this would be a recipe for complete disaster, but as long as I played there, I never saw any real incidents, although I was completely terrified most nights. The things I did for money back then. On this particular night, when I started my second set, there was a table full of college girls close to the stage who all seemed to be enjoying the music, having a good time, drinking half-price wine. I also noticed a group of about five really large guys and what was probably their wives or girlfriends sitting to my right. They almost looked like football players. And about halfway into the second set, two college guys sat with the table full of girls, and I could hear them saying things like, "Make it stop," and "You suck," and other generally shitty comments like that, just loud enough for me to hear. I could tell it was making the table of girls a bit uncomfortable, and I just tried to let it slide, and I continued to play music and do the job I was hired to do. And this went on for the rest of the second set and got more and more obnoxious by the beginning of my third set until I finally stopped in the middle of a song and called the most obnoxious of the two guys out over the mic. I said something along the lines of, "Okay, Mr. Critic Guy, first of all, if you're so good, where's your gig tonight? I'm getting paid to be here. What's your excuse?" He didn't like that very much, but I figured that since he was trying so desperately hard to get attention from the room that I would just give it to him and hopefully make him shut up so I could finish my gig. I would generally try to make peace with aggressive hecklers by offering to buy them drinks on my breaks or sitting down to chat with them and explain that I was cool if they didn't like the music because you can't ever please everyone, but just don't be an asshole about it. If you don't like the music, then leave. No one's forcing you to stay anywhere. I said a few of these things to this dude too until I finally said, "All right, if you think you you can get up here and do a better job than me, then why don't you just come up and play a song and we'll let the audience judge. I wasn't expecting him to do this, but he stood right up and said, okay, I'll play a song, and then started walking towards me kind of half aggressively. And I felt my neck get hot with adrenaline, and my thoughts at that time were, okay, if he plays a song and is really good, I'll have no problem giving him props and just being done with this heckling nonsense. And I also thought, if I hand him my guitar and he breaks it or any of my stuff, I'll kill him with it. And as soon as he made his way to the stage, a guy from a group at the back of the room yelled out, "We've got your back, MJ." And then the table of huge dudes and their wives to my right also yelled out, "We've got your back too, man." So I felt a little better, and I handed this college douchebag my guitar and said, "All right, let's hear what you got, man." And no surprise, he was terrible. Back then, I used to say to people, all the wannabe guitarists would tell me that I was a terrible guitarist, and all the wannabe singers would tell me that I was a terrible singer. It was always like that. After he played his terrible song to boos from most of the patio, except for the clearly very embarrassed table of girls that this guy and his buddy were sitting with, he didn't stick around. None of them did. They all got up and left. And I did one more song after him to finish the night, and I went first to the group at the back of the room to thank them for being so kind and cool, and then over to the table of large guys at the front, and they immediately told me that they were a group of search and rescue Marines just back from a tour of duty in Iraq. Their exact words were, "You were never in any danger, sir." I think I started laughing really hard, which they got a huge kick out of. And then one of them paid me one of the highest compliments ever by saying, "Man, we've been all over the world and have seen all kinds of musicians get heckled. And I just want to tell you that you handled that situation with just about the most class that I've ever seen. Much respect to you from all of us." And I couldn't help but say, "So wait. Search and rescue Marines. So you guys are the ones that go in to rescue the already incredibly insane brave guys at the front of all the shit? That means that you're even bigger badasses than the biggest badasses?" They love this, and I just remember being incredibly humbled and thankful at their very kind words. And, you know, if getting up in front of people was easy, then everybody would do it, and they would be successful at it. But it's not that way. It's not easy. And I'm incredibly lucky and thankful these days that everyone where I go with my current gig is very happy to see us. Not a second of it's lost on me, and even though it sucked at the time, I'm grateful for all those shitty experiences to remind me just how good I have it now. Doesn't take much to be kind to people, so why not just do that? The old cliche is definitely true. If you don't have anything nice to say, then just don't say anything at all. If you don't like the music somewhere, leave. If you don't like the comedy somewhere, leave. You achieve absolutely nothing by making somebody feel bad. It just makes you an asshole. And that does it for another installment of
Stories from the Road!
Okay, as I said, Chris Nix is here today. This talk leans much more towards the guitar nerds out there. Chris and I talk about guitar gear all the time, so I just figured why not record us talking about it and just put it up there as a podcast. So that's exactly what I'm doing. There are some nuggets in here for the Jonathan Davis fans out there also. If you're a guitar player, then get ready for a whole bunch of really great info about guitars and guitar gear. And if you don't know anything about guitar and want to learn some things, you'll get that here too. Or if you just want to hear a couple friends chat in the way that friends do, keep it here as well. Have I set it up enough? I think so. This is me and my friend Chris Nix. Well, it's back, you know, you put the red light on and you go, okay.
Hey, that's a you problem, right?
That is a me problem.
You're the host. Set me up and I knock him back. That's what we do.
I traded all my other vices for coffee. I figured I had to be hooked on something.
So what are we talking about? Gear? Is that what we're doing?
Well, yeah. We haven't really done an inside baseball thing
that's
yet.
True.
And we do it every day anyway.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
But now that, you know, now that I've started the recorder going, we'll probably just be sitting here staring at each other going... Well, let's start by... talking about this idea of, because this is something that over the past little bit, you know, my escapades with guitars, I've been trying to build the perfect Strat for
right.
like the last year or so, because the gig I'm in now is a Strat gig, and
every gig is a Strat gig.
And you said to me, every gig is a Strat gig, right? Well, that's, you know, to some degree, that's very true. I mean, but I was trying to trying to put the perfect components together like most guitar players do. We want to take the best of all the aspects of things we like about the guitar and put the perfect body with the perfect neck, with the perfect electronics, with the perfect everything. And sometimes, I mean, that can be problematic because, you know, you don't know if a certain body's going to work with a certain neck or certain electronics are going to work with that choice of woods and blah, blah, blah. Just so many variables.
I mean, there are things. Being left-handed, I spent a lot of time putting guitars together when I was a kid because there weren't a lot of lefties around. Right. And when there were, they were more expensive. And, I mean, I don't know if you remember, there was usually like a 20 to 25% markup if you wanted a left-handed guitar.
You didn't own a lefty guitar till quite a while in, right?
I was probably, I started playing guitar technically when I was 3, but really got into it when I was 7. So it took me a minute to figure out what I wanted to do with my life. And, but I didn't.
It took me a little bit at the age of 3 to figure out what the fuck I was doing.
So when I was, I think the first one I got that was lefty was, I was like 13. And I had had a bunch of, you know, flipped over righties before that and restrung and all that. I don't play Albert King style with the high E on top. I actually play
properly.
Like righty does, but mirrored.
Not the other way is improv. There's no right or wrong.
No, I know some great players that play that way, actually. Yeah. But it was probably about 13. I remember what it was. It was a blonde Fender Stratocaster. Mm-hmm. I'd had Strats. I say Strat like I was a 7-year-old kid walking around with a guitar collection, but I was not. My first like good electric pro level guitar was a right-handed Telecaster Deluxe from the early 70s with the two humbuckers.
Yeah.
It was flipped over, and I got that when I was about 10 or 11 and played it until I got that left-handed Strat, and it was just an American-made, whatever year that was, left-handed blonde Strat with a maple. It actually had a rosewood neck on it, and that's when the part swapping thing started.
Yeah,
because I didn't want a rosewood neck, and wanted bigger frets and like all the stuff.
Right,
and so
what helped you formulate those things? Because it's weird for as long as I've been playing, I think we probably been playing about the same amount of time. You're a couple of years older than me, but I think we both started when we were super young, so about the same amount of time. And it's strange for me now that I've been in Nashville for about 5 years to be just now sort of figuring out exactly what I like. And I don't know if that's because the goalpost keeps moving, or the goalpost has kept on moving.
Case, it's more of a, you've been into different things at different times as far as guitars go. I've with Strats, that's been the one constant. I love all guitars, actually. There's really, even the ones that are terrible and goofy, they're guitars, come on. That's the most fun thing in the world. I've had Les Pauls and all that, but you go through phases where you're like super into a Les Paul. That's going to be me,
That's for sure.
And bass player in the Power Triplets, Trip, does that all the time. Trip Walmsley, like every year I'll get a text or something to say, this year I'm the Alembic guy, or this guy, or is all I'm playing right now, But it's a home base has always been a Strat for me. And so that
for
was
me too, for sure.
Well, but see, I was poor as dirt as a kid, really most of my life. So it was, I couldn't just go out and have like a guitar of every flavor, just for any whim. So it was, I had to kind of perfect the one thing that I knew was for me. And then I'd kind of branch out from there to other guitars.
So here's a question. What for you, because I know what it is for me, but for you, what is it about the Strat that you like, that you think it makes it such a versatile instrument for basically any gig that you can play, from rock to blues to the country to whatever?
The tone, and the funny thing is I actually like stock Strats, no humbuckers or, I like single coil Strat pickups that are humming and noisy and all those things.
Yeah.
I just like the sound of it. I found that I can use my hands to make it sound what I want it to sound yeah. like. You know, it's really dynamic. There's no hiding behind it. Mm-hmm. I find with humbuckers, it's a little more homogenizing. And I'm not saying that if you use humbuckers, you can't be yourself or anything. It's just that it's, for me, it doesn't have as much of a dynamic. In other words, if you pick hard or you pick softly, single coils, lower output single coils are going to give you that difference. You're going to be able to hear the dramatic difference between how you pick or if you use your fingers or, you know, whatever.
Right.
With humbuckers, it kind of rounds everything off.
Uh-huh.
It's sort of like
more of a compressed kind of thing. Where
more
it's,
of a compressed yeah. thing, and there are other things, other factors. There are only a handful of humbuckers that I actually like because to me, there's a weird kind of upper mid nasal thing that comes from combining like the two coils of a humbucker. Oh, this is going to get super nerdy.
Fine, listen, let's go nerdy yeah. as shit.
So we might lose the humbuckers. But... with a single coil, you've got one slender pickup window of the string that you're taking a picture of. That's mm-hmm. one coil, and right. it's beneath this one specific area of the set of strings that it's underneath. Right.
right.
And so it's getting that one frequency that's because the strings, different places on the strings project different
sure.
tones.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so if you know, like if you pick towards the bridge, you know, it's brighter and
yeah.
you know, whatever.
Yeah.
On yeah. the neck, it's more warm. Well, in a smaller way, when you have a humbucker, you have two pickups that are wired together, two single coils wired together to correct the hum noise.
Right.
But those two coils are in two different spots underneath right. the string. Even though they're very close together, they're still catching a very subtle difference between those two areas.
Yeah.
And then they're combining them into one signal. And anytime you do something like that, you run the risk of like phase cancellation, or
right.
You are going to lose some, you know, some frequency somewhere and create like a peak in another frequency because of the phase.
Well, that makes complete sense. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
yeah. yeah. So, so that always, the sound of humbuckers with that always kind of bugged me a little bit when I played. You know, I love Jimmy Page and, you know, like Eddie Van Halen, all these people that use them. But it's their sound, you know.
Yeah.
And for me, the single coil was just more of a natural thing for
right,
me.
Right, right. Well, you were talking, I mean, you kind of steered me in a few different directions. And at first I thought, he's crazy. There's no way that this is that makes a difference. Well, you know, because I didn't know, you
right.
know, and
yeah.
I'm incredibly picky about my stuff
yeah.
too, but maybe not to the level of you, but I think that's because there's still a learning curve going on with me where I'm seeing the difference in like, well, let's take quarter sawn necks for
right.
example.
Right.
And you gave me the best, you sold it to me the best way when I was just about to buy one for one of my things. And I told you, sell this to me.
Oh, the hallway?
Well, yeah. Can you explain
yeah, yeah.
that? Because there's,
okay.
Most of the guitar players probably now are listening, and most of the other people are probably tuned out. So
yeah.
you can, I guess we don't need to over explain it. But,
right.
But
yeah.
there's quarter sawn necks, and then there's flat sawn necks.
Yeah, flat sawn.
Quarter sawn necks.
So
okay.
With most guitars that are lesser expensive tend to be flat sawn because it's the more common way of doing things.
It's cheaper to produce, right?
It's cheaper. Well, it's just more, you can produce more of it out of a chunk of wood.
Right, yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
But with quarter sawn, as far as the tonal difference, I actually don't give a flying fuck about how much something costs. You know, if it's 25 cents, but it beats the living shit out of some, you know, $50,000
right.
boutique, only four were made. I'll take the 25 cent thing that sounds better
yeah,
every
yeah,
day.
Yeah,
I don't
yeah.
get care. I'm a working player that,
right.
you know, I play guitar because I'm a composer and the guitar made more sense to me to play than drums. Otherwise, I'd be a drummer or a violinist or something. But you can play more notes on a guitar. So I don't care about the expense. So anything that I'm talking about, don't mistake it for being some kind of boutique snobbery, because I actually
yeah.
find that kind of annoying.
Yeah,
you know,
right. yeah.
Or not annoying, but because I don't walk around going, bah. But I'm not into that. But with quarter sawn, all right. So the neck joint, where the neck and the body are put together.
Mm.
That's the sole connection of communication between the entire neck from the headstock down to the 21st or 2nd fret, whichever, you know, 24 or whatever, and the body of the guitar. And you want them to have as much communication with one another. You want them to be one system, not two things bolted together, not talking to each other.
Right.
With flats on, if you look at the fret, if you hold a neck down to where you're looking at the guitar end of the neck and you can see the wood grain, flats on, you see the grain going horizontally. Mm-hmm. And so you've got basically these shelves of grain that go from the where the neck is connected to the body up to the top of the fretboard. So it's like a series mm-hmm. of shelves that stack up to that. So what you end up having is, if you think of those shelves as being walls in a hallway,
They're running opposite.
So with quarters on, it's the other way. It's actually the walls are next to each other, and each of those walls are touching the guitar body because now it's vertical.
Right.
So those lines, the grain lines, are now vertical.
Yeah.
So what you end up with is a series of hallways with grains in between, but every single piece of wood within those grains is touching the body. It's not with flat sawn, each one of those chambers or hallways are separated from the body the further you get up towards the fretboard, because mm-hmm. you've got all these layers of grain in between. But right. if it's sideways, if it's quarter sawn, then every single hallway is touching the body.
Right.
So the entire neck is now connected to the body.
Right.
And you get a more, for me, it's a really dramatic difference. You really get a pretty strong transference of resonance.
Yeah, so. I didn't believe it till I tried it.
Yeah.
And picking up a guitar with a flat sawn neck that I had a Strat, you know, that was like that, and, mm-hmm. and versus the other one, it was like a night and day difference.
Oh,
for
yeah,
me.
Yeah, yeah, it's incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, you could be the same, you know, the same body, swap out a neck with a quarter sawn, and it doesn't even have to be a great quarter sawn neck. It's still going to dog the flat sawn every time. You know.
Yeah, I noticed a huge difference, and I also. I mean, I read up on it a lot too, because that's what I do with everything before I go into it. I kind of overanalyze and over research, but they're more stable to temperature changes.
Yeah, they're stronger. I mean, with a truss rod and all that, flat songs are still pretty strong.
You know, sure,
guitar necks in general, they've got that
they
figured out.
Yeah. How many pounds of pressure is it? Something like
8 million trillion.
yeah.
But yeah, so I mean, there's that, and then the other part is the body. I like one piece. I actually don't have anything against two piece. But if you're going to have two piece, then the piece that the, and by two piece I mean you have a chunk of wood that you're going to cut a Strat shape out of, or a Tele or whatever, mm-hmm. Sometimes those pieces of wood aren't wide enough to make the body, you know, so they have to glue two pieces of wood together and then cut out the shape, and then you're going to have this seam somewhere in the body where those two pieces are joined together, and you don't even know it if it's painted or whatever.
Sure.
So what I found is that if what you want is most of the wood to be, you want that seam kind of as far away from the neck joint, because usually it runs down the center of the body, mm-hmm. but you want it as far away from the line coming from the neck through the neck joint down to where the strap peg is on the butt of the guitar behind the bridge. You want it to be as much, as close to a one piece as you can get.
Right.
If it's three piece, you want that middle piece to be the one that the necks connect. You want to have those wings that, you know, the second and third pieces to be as minuscule as possible.
I mean, it's funny because like these things for guys like us who are quote unquote pros who've been doing this forever.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we've discussed this too. At a certain point, I could hand you a $10 Sears guitar and you're still going to sound like you.
Right.
And I'm still going to sound like,
I'm
still going to sound like me on that guitar. So I think this is sort of, these are the sort of things that I guess once you've played for 30 years, 35 years that you get.
Well, I look at it, it's not even, it's not that I made a choice to be this way. It's that, anyone who's a musician knows that, and I mean anyone, like a violinist, you know, there is a reason that, beyond the collectability, that Stradivarius, or that's such a, you know,
right.
copied, and because he figured it out.
Yeah.
You know, he figured the things that I'm talking about with guitars are things this guy figured out for violins. Yeah. You know, it's like every detail, get everything kind of together, and what makes the note, you know. The thing that I'm talking about wouldn't work for someone that's like into, actually, I would argue that it would, but if someone's really into kind of a stiff, brittle sound, this isn't going to give you that. This is going to give you a lot of note. If you're looking for the note of whatever you're playing anywhere on the neck, this is going to lead you that way. But if you want that stiff, brittle thing with mostly pick attack and not as much note, this is the opposite of that. But it does come back. I'm sorry, I got off track.
No,
but it is, you know, anyone who's a musician, that's your voice. Unlike you, I'm not really a singer. I pretend to be when I'm singing backup vocals, but I'm not a singer. And so the guitar, any pedals or cables that I'm using, or the amp, that's my art being projected to the world.
Sure.
That's the thing that's coming through me and channeling and, you know, connected to the, you know, musical universe and channeling it out. That's how it comes out. And if you don't take care to have the best representation of who you are, or the instruments that represent the sound that you feel is who you are, then you're not being, it's not as gratifying for you as an artist.
Right. Well, it makes it a lot easier when it's not fighting you, too.
Like
when
You know, I mean, you it's less, I mean, you know, this amp that I just finished is, you know, I plugged into it and was like, oh, okay, this is the best sounding amp I've ever had, because I don't have to think when I'm playing. And as soon as I play something or think something or feel something, my fingers have already done it, and the amp gives it to you, you know.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
it's because you've plugged a guitar in that you've done all this work to build and, you know, or get right, and, you know, all your stuff is right. Then it frees you up, frees up your self-expression.
Yeah.
And, you know, as, you know, you hear people harp on self-indulgent and everything, but you know my thing with that. If it's not self-indulgent, you're not actually being an honest artist.
Well, yeah, we'll get to the amps in a second, but I want to touch on my journey to this epiphany that I had, that you told me quite some time back, and this is going to be a ringing endorsement for Fender and for Eric Johnson and for the team that helped him put together the Eric Johnson Strat.
Because,
man, I was stuck on trying to build, several, a guitar and a backup, ostensibly to bring on the road for my new gig, something that I could have. And if I broke a string, I could have essentially close to the same thing. So I put together some Strat bodies and got this Edge signature neck, the Edge from U2, who I'm a huge fan of. And they were quarter sawn necks, big headstocks, and I put these guitars together and I put my favorite pickups in them, and I got my favorite saddles and got all the stuff, and they were great guitars. But you kept telling me, buy an Eric Johnson signature Strat. It's the best thing they make.
Yeah, well, when I went to work, I worked for Fender for a little while doing clinics and stuff, and I went out to their spot and, you know, was playing a bunch of their different guitars that they had, and they had, I played a prototype, played a couple of prototypes of it, or it was right before they were being released. And, you know, it was like, oh, well, this is the best Strat they've made probably ever, to be honest, because even the 50s Strats, they're kind of great because now they're old and dry and, you know, really cool.
Right.
But there are features on, you know, some of the things on the Eric Strat were things I would have done to it, bigger frets. I would have gone bigger, but, you know, they're fine, medium jumbos, and the pickups sound great. You know, it's quarter sawn maple and one piece maple neck, and, you know, the bodies are great. But yeah, and, you know, nitrocellulose lacquer for finish.
Well,
and
I'll tell
all
you,
those things.
I went from thinking that these Edge signature Strats that I was sort of putting together, cobbling together, were like the shit. And then I found an EJ Strat online for, it was like a blemished model for like $400 less than what you get them for new. And I bought it on a payment plan. I thought, okay, I'm going to take a dive into this and do it and just see what the hell happens. And when that guitar showed up, it changed my life. It suddenly.
And the funniest part is I've been telling you,
I know,
fucking
you have,
years.
Dude,
just get an EJ Strat. You don't have to, you know, build all these things and hodgepodge Frankenstrats.
Well,
and
I could have saved a lot of time and money, but you don't know till you know. You know what I mean?
And well, I knew and you didn't listen to me, but that's, you know. That's
well, once this thing showed up and I plugged it in, it was like, and I don't know if I can properly explain it, but I think I told you that it's like, it was like 20% better in ways that I can't really explain than the other guitars.
Yeah, you can have a perfectly good instrument. You know, that's one of the things, actually, and this is sort of, I think, your point with all of this, which is that you can have a guitar that's really good and think that you're set, you know?
Right.
But one day you're going to play a guitar that's like, oh, wait a minute. Right. I didn't know that there was that, that it could be that much better. And so I think it kind of behooves any musician to have that searching gene, you know, to have that gene within themselves.
I think we all have it. I mean,
we have it, but I mean, I think it's one of those things that you you have to focus it, and you know, there's a point where. Because I remember when you had put, like in the last year or two, you put together, I don't know, what, 5 different Strats or something.
I've had a lot of Strats.
You know,
and
each one you'd put together, you're like, man, this one's really, really great. Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, it's cool. Yeah. You know? I'm thinking, you know.
I sold them all.
Yeah.
Literally. When the EJ Strat showed up, I went, fuck it. I'm going to sell all this stuff because I don't, like, it was like I found my guitar.
Yeah.
You know? And even after that, I kind of was like, well, I have this as a backup, and I'd pick up the backup and go, no, it's like 20% not as cool as the EJ Strat.
Right.
For whatever
reason. And they're
reason.
Not even that expensive for what they are.
No, they really aren't.
But I mean, that's the thing too, is that like, I don't even own one. You know? I mean, I'm left-handed. They don't make them lefty because, you know, down with righty. But
bastards.
I know. Racist. Anyway, but no, it. But there are little things that, you know, I would change for me. But that's, you know, fine.
Well, you know me, too. Like, I would swap saddles out and swap, and you give me shit. We won't mention anything by name. Just to be safe. But there was a set of saddles that I've been using that I loved or thought I loved.
They're terrible.
Well, with the EJ, I just didn't touch anything. I was like, I am not going
to
change anything. Yeah, right. Well, you know, lesson learned. And it's funny. Sometimes, you know, it's kind of like.
Yeah. So you're saying those rolled steel saddles on that.
They sound really good. You fuck.
Yeah, right. That's right. They do. And guess what? You're not going to break strings on them either. And they'll stay in tune.
Yeah.
Who knew?
Yeah. Who knew?
Not
well,
me.
It's
fucker. What do I know?
See the abuse I take. It's like a, you know, it's like a junkie's not going to get clean, you know. Why did I jump to that analogy? But but it changed my life, and I remember calling you and just going, man, this is like I've.
And what did I say?
You said, yeah, I told you so.
All right,
yeah. All right. Well, I think that probably covers the guitar line of things. Now I want to talk about Derek's pedals, because they're the particular pedal that we both use that you had a hand in designing. This is just gear talk today. You fucking gear talk.
He designed it. He would send it to me, and I would be yes or no, and you know, and we kind of tweaked it and stuff.
Right.
And
well, we're gonna give a shout out to Derek Tabata.
Yeah, yeah. Tone Freak.
Tone Freak Effects.
Tonefreak.com.
There's an overdrive pedal called the Abunai 2. And I was, you know, again, it's kind of like we all do online, always searching for the next overdrive pedal. I think when I moved to Nashville, I had gone through a different overdrive pedal, like every.
You'd bring them over here. You'd say, hey, man, I have this, you know, Exxon Valdez fuzz pedal. So why don't
actually,
I bring it over?
That might be a cool sounding
pedal.
The sound of death.
The sound of oily birds dying on the beach.
Yeah.
There's a goth song in that somewhere.
There is.
So, yeah, I mean, yeah, you'd bring over these things and we'd try them, and you're like, man, this is really awesome. And then I'd hear it, and you know, it's like, well, the bubbles are weird. And, you know, I always think of, you know, distortion, the grain, and is there bubbles? They sound like bubbles to me, you know, so it just, But that's my taste, you know. It just it depends on
it's funny because I would bring things over here because your rig to me still is the best sounding rig I've ever played through, and I would bring stuff over here, play a guitar, play something through your rig, and go, fuck, that sounds fucking amazing. Then I'd get back to my rig at home and go, and I was like, oh fuck, I suck. This is terrible. But the Abani is an interesting thing because you kind of were like, you should just get an Abani. And yeah. I reached out to Derek, and Derek was very kind, has been very kind to me, and has hooked me up with several of these pedals now at a very, very cool price. And he's just a great dude. And if you're looking for the best overdrive pedal that works with every single amp you plug it into.
Well, but that was the whole point when we were working on it, was that, you know, what I told him I wanted or was trying to get out of it was, you know, when you know this, when you do fly dates or you're,
whatever it is,
when you know, I want to be able to plug into any amp, you know,
because sometimes you don't know what you're going to get. Well, like you get whatever the fuck is there.
Yeah. I mean, I generally play through Fenders and you know, Plexis. So non-master, really good sounding amp.
I will say to interject, that is the cool thing about living in the time we live now, is that it's almost always a Hot Rod Deluxe or a DeVille or one of those amps.
Which are really solid amps.
And they sound really great.
Yeah, they're solid amps. But that's the thing, is that I wanted something that would sound brilliant through anything and not have to change my pedal board around. Yeah. So that was kind of what we were gunning for. And it does that. You know, I mean, I've you know, and now you have used it in just about every kind of amp.
I won't use anything else. It's funny.
I
found the guitar that I want now, and I'm not really looking anymore. I mean, to a degree. And the same thing with overdrive pedals. I just don't really even look at overdrive pedals anymore. I'm not searching. So what's that circuit based on? Is it a TS-808 kind of idea?
Yeah, it's kind of an 808, you know, modded out TS-808. You know, it's...
You can get a lot more gain out of that than a TS-808, though, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like a shit ton
more.
Yeah,
it's got, like, LED mods and, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And it's got a little three-way switch that you can have, like, more 808, somewhere between 808 and modded out, and then full-on, you know, peel your face off kind of thing.
Right.
And I like the peel your face off. I actually don't set the drive that high. I mean, it's...
Yeah, I don't either.
I pretty much set everything more or less halfway up. And that's kind of it. But yeah, it's a really... The great thing with it is that with a lot of tube screamers or, you know, that you always end up losing low end from your signal from your guitar going into an amp when you turn a pedal on, almost all, you know, for that type of pedal. But this doesn't have that. It, you know, it retains a lot of that stuff, but, you know, the high end isn't piercing. Like I said, the high end's really cool because of the being able to plug into any, you know, an AC30 or a twin or, you know, whatever, and you can still make it work.
Right.
You know, that was the real test, was, you know, when we were working on it, I would plug it into my Plexi, but then I'd plug it into you know, several Blackface mid-60s twins, and those sound horrible with overdrive to me. And so when I could plug into one of those and make it sound good with overdrive, you know, that was when I kind of felt like it was there. And, you know, it's got this great mid-range. You can hear all the notes in the chords, no matter how much drive you've got going.
That's huge.
You can
for
hear
me too.
Note
yep.
separation.
Yeah.
So you can play really screwed up, you know, chords that real close voicings, but you can still hear every note through the fizz. There's not like a separate fizz and then some note somewhere down under that, you know, which drives me nuts. But
I hate that too.
It's all one, you know, thing. It's, you know, this one gelatinous blob coming at your face.
Yeah. Well, that changed my life as well, having that pedal on my board. And I have another one on the way right now. I just ordered a second one, which is cool. So thank you, Derek, if you're listening. Yeah. You're the man.
You have my address. I want another one.
Yeah. So, look, if you're a guitar aficionado or a guitar player or pro or amateur or whatever, and you want a great overdrive pedal for...
Does he slip you some money or something?
No, what is this when something's good and a guy is that nice of a guy.
Right.
I mean, he really is a sweetheart of a guy.
Is.
And
yeah.
he's been incredibly generous, like I said, with me. Like, I just sent him an email cold saying, hey, I'm Chris Nix's friend, and he told me about this pedal that you guys built, and, you know, I want one, you know?
Yeah. He emailed me and said, you know this guy? I said, I don't know.
Fuck this guy. Yeah. Let's talk about effects and all that kind of thing. And I guess I'll start by telling you, Mike, you kind of know where I come from, but I'll start by t- telling you how I started. I got incredibly spoiled out of the gate when I was a kid. The manager that worked with my band, I was, my first rig, this is going to make you cringe and maybe a lot of other people out there, was a Roland Jazz Chorus.
Oh, I already knew about that, so I was braced.
Yeah.
God, it's less. That's
it
horrible.
Was a Roland Jazz Chorus with one of those Roland...
Those are hateful machines.
Yeah, they really are. I mean, not for some people make them work. Sting played through one for a long time in the 80s.
Sting, that bastion of brilliant guitar tone.
Yeah, well, I don't know. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know why I got a Roland Jazz Chorus. No idea. And this is not bashing the Roland people either. You know, like I'm gonna get endorsed by some people, and I'm gonna get hate mail from others. But I had one of those Roland GP808 multi effects rack processors through that thing, and I made it work, but it was pretty brittle and awful. So our manager at the time was in a band called Head East, which was I don't know if you remember the song, Save My Life, I'm Going Down for the Last Time. The real classic. He was in that band. So he had a bunch of vintage gear that he was very, very generous with and said, man, I'm going to loan you some stuff that's going to, this is what a real tone is. This is what you should be using. So he, and I was 16, 17 years old, and I was taking out a 60s, like a late 60s Marshall Plexi. I'm not sure what the first year of production on those was.
Well, 45s came out in like 65, 66, and then...
Okay, so this was like a 69...
69 would have been a metal panel,
yes,
but it's
metal
still
panel.
The same circuit as the 68,
right,
which
right,
is
right.
Plexi. Yeah.
So that, through a 4x12 Marshall cab with greenbacks, with the original greenbacks in it, and then he lent me his... late, like 69 Les Paul. It was a Les Paul Deluxe gold top that he had modded and put regular humbuckers in it.
Yeah.
And it was beat to shit. And it, man, there was, it, we used to take a full packing blanket and turn the 4x12 to the back wall and throw this packing blanket over it. And it was still way too fucking loud.
Oh yeah.
But that shaped a lot of the way that you were mentioning note separation. And that's, I'm huge. That's a huge thing for me. Like, it can't be so overdriven that you're not hearing the music in the things you're playing. Like, I love an overdriven guitar, a fuzzed out guitar like everyone else, but I want to hear the notes inside it. And that kind of taught me, because as a kid, you know, your tendency when you can't really play that well is just to turn up all the gain so that the gain's doing all the work for you.
Right.
And for me, playing through the Marshall was like, oh shit. Like, I actually, now I have to, like, people are going to like, they're going to hear this. I have to play, you know? So that kind of got me out of the turn up the gain real high. I was drag kicking and screaming into that because I thought, oh, it's not like distorted enough. And Tony Gross, the guy that I'm talking about, was like, no, trust me. You're like, cause I would ask him after every show, he would run front of house for us. And I would ask him, how was the guitar sound? And he'd always go, the answer was always really thin. And I hated that. So I was on a constant sort of quest to have him go, man, it sounded great. You know? And so when I used the Marshall, he would be like, dude, fucking huge.
Yeah.
But there was less gain. So there was, you know, it was kind of the Angus Young thing where AC/DC to me always sounded like the heaviest fucking band. But if you really listen to those guitars, they're
gain-y.
Clean as shit.
Yeah, they're really not that gain-y.
Yeah.
It's just that they have two of them playing at the same time, which is the wall of sound. And then it's, you know, they're cranked and they're driving. Yeah. But man, that sound.
I really fell in love with that. Yeah. That's where I really fell in love with that Marshall sound is through that. And then I kind of graduated to the AC30 thing, but I think I'm back in Marshall land thanks to you. Yeah. Now you're just costing me $1 million. But as far as effects go, you've had the same board, I think, ever since I've known you.
Yeah.
It has changed very little.
Yeah, 20 years since we've known each other, and it really hasn't changed at all, like minor tweaks.
So explain to me, I know this is for the people listening, but like your approach on how you set the amp, what you use the overdrive for, what you use your effects chain, how you use it, I guess.
Well, it's, you know, ideally, I would take two amps to every gig, you know, and with my bands, I'll do that. Like if it's the Power Triplets or the Chris Nix Experience or whatever the fuck I'm going to call it. you know, I'll take two amps and usually a wet, dry, wet effect system, that a whole other thing we can talk about later if you want. Mm-hmm. But with like most gigs, you're taking one amp and you're, you know, doing whatever. what I use is I don't even know what do I have on this volume. No, I basically run it so that I have dynamic control of the sound, and I can get as, you know, get it as overdriven and crazy as I want, but still get it to be clean without having to switch channel. I hate channel switching amplifiers with every part of my being. So
edit set so that you wouldn't clip it.
Yeah, I'm just clipping this thing because of my hatred for the Mastermind. That's great. Anyway, so the point is that all right, I want to be able to get clean and sensitive and all of that, but I also want it to sound like a raging dragon, you know, burning up a town.
You do a lot. You do a lot with the volume on the guitar and a lot with your volume pedal.
Yeah, yeah. Only reason that I have a volume pedal is because I like to do like a lot of harp harmonics, and I can't have, I ride my pinky on my Strat on the volume knob more than anything.
Right.
But when I'm doing harp harmonics, I can't also have my hand over there, you know, holding the volume knob. So
yeah,
I use my foot for that.
Right.
And, you know, just so that I can have it on the floor.
And you run your amps just
grunting
just a little.
Yeah. Just a little bit. And, and then
we're giving away all your secrets today.
I don't care. Yeah, whatever.
Am I going to get killed after this?
No. Everyone's free to have them. It's, you know,
Chris took Michael out back and hit him over the head with a rock after the podcast.
Yeah.
With the cat.
But yeah, but with the cool thing is, even with the amp grunting like that, when you back off the volume on your guitar or with a volume pedal, it cleans up pretty nicely, you know? And sure. But the other thing is, I also have, in this case, the Abunai on almost all the time. I mean, 99.8% of the time it's on.
Yeah.
And all of the any clean-ish thing is just me with the volume knob backing off a lot.
Yeah.
This is where we go back to the thing about distortion bubbles, you know, overdrive bubbles. When you combine, I like the sound of an amp cranked, but I really like the sound of a pretty cranked amp with a really cool pedal that has a different grain in the bubbles. And when those two different grains combine, you get this really cool, complex thing that one of them by themselves can't do.
Yeah,
you know, that pedal through a clean amp isn't going to do the same thing as it's going to do with that amp doing it, and the amp's not going to do it on its own.
Right.
So I really like that. And then to really compound things, when I want to, you know, get the dragon slaying, you know, whatever, the dragon attacking the town from above sound, then I've got a fuzz pedal that I'll kick on as a boost in front of the Abunai. And
tell
and
me about that a little bit too, because that's,
I have a couple of different ones that I use, but most of the time it's this Psionic Audio Z2, but it really, you can do it with when we first met, I didn't have that.
Right.
I was using a fuzz face, and I still really like those. But it was, the fuzz wasn't up very high. It was mostly a volume boost, you know, because those, that what I like are fuzzes that have a little bit of a low end kick too, because for the sound of the guitar and the Abunai and the amp, it needs to be a certain chunky but cool dynamic round note kind of sound, but not thin, but a little more, it cuts a little more.
Yep.
And then with and not so dominant, but then when I kick on the boost, I actually like a little bit of a low end boost, which, you know, most of the time when you hear people talk about solo boost pedals or whatever, they're, you know, oh, it's a mid boost and it does this and cut through the mix. But that's a terrible sound.
Yeah, you know? I don't care for that
cut
either.
Through the mix is that's all relative, but for what I do, it doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. I like the sound to get bigger and more cello-y and, you know, more like a cello or more, you know, that really cool sustain-y thing, with a little, sounds like a cello with a hint of violence. That's what we're going for. Yeah. So that's what it does. But I've used different boost pedals for that. I have a couple that I kind of rotate out. Most of the time, it's the Psionic Z2 that Lyle built that he doesn't make anymore because
Lyle.
He should. Yeah. And I also have another one of his. It's a three... 14, which is his sort of overtecked version of a Big Muff.
Yep.
And then I have some different fuzz faces, and
it's so weird, yeah. Because I went through something with this too, where it took me a while to find the proper right. fuzz to work in front of the Abunai.
Yeah.
And I, before we talked about this, again, you've taught me a lot, so I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
Using the fuzz as a volume boost, where the fuzz is pretty much barely on, yeah. was a new thing for me. I was used to, you know, having a fuzz pedal on the board where I would use the overdrive for some things, and then I would turn that off and use the fuzz for other things.
Right.
So if the fuzz on my board is no longer ever by itself pedal. It's always right. in front of the Abunai,
yeah.
and always for the boost, and always. And that was something I never thought of it that way. Cause right. I think the exact question I asked you was, man, I'm looking for something to boost my solo sound,
mm-hmm.
but it always gets super thin when I boost it with something in front of it,
right.
whether a boost pedal or whatever. And yeah. you're like, oh yeah, I put a fuzz in front. And it was just like, of course. You're like, it made complete sense to me once you said it.
Yeah.
But it took me a while. And I've settled on a JHS Muffaletta, which is
interesting.
All the Big Muff circuits. It's like a rotary thing. And somehow he's squeezed every analog circuit into the same pedal where it's just a dial.
I'll probably hate it. I'm just kidding.
No, it's a really cool pedal.
And I have a thing against, you know, and I'm not saying this pedal is that because I haven't played through.
Yeah.
But I tend to really...
You don't like the jack.
Run away from things that try to do everything.
Swiss Army knife kind of thing.
Because most of the ones, most of those things that I've tried to play through, be it a pedal, an amp, a guitar, you know, it's a whole lot of close but no cigar.
Right.
Like none of the tones are like, no one of them. I like things that do one thing better than anything else.
Yeah,
not
right.
one thing that tries to do 50 things slightly worse than the one thing that does it great.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I'll deal with the carrying extra shit or.
Well, it's whatever. Funny. I use the triangle setting on it. I've tried the other ones in the triangle setting, which is whatever that Big Muff is. There was a triangle model. I don't know what that exactly is, but that one particularly works really well with the Abunai, and it sounds great. So like until I find something else that I like better, that's what I use.
That's cool.
Yeah, it is cool. So that, yeah, that was an eye opener for me to think of the fuzz as
well. And something else too is I'll run, I don't run into my volume pedal first. I actually go to the fuzz, the boost pedal first, and then go into the volume pedal. And then that feeds whatever else is behind it. Because then, if I'm doing slide stuff, for example, I can turn the boost on with the other pedals, and so you get that big glorious sound. But if I want that tone, but back it off a little bit while I'm playing, I can do that. And you actually can change the mix of the bubbles with your voice. It's really it's stupid. Okay. Really,
well,
crazy
stuff, this is making sense to somebody.
Yeah, yeah.
Certainly not me. Maybe. But
it makes sense to me. I hear it. You know, it's fine. But yeah. And I've got a wah. I use different wahs for different boards and for different things.
Yeah.
I've got a great one that was built in, I think, 69 that my buddy Jeff Jordan, the brilliant Jeff Jordan, gave me recently. And, and it's battery. I keep that at home.
Sure.
And use that for recording and stuff. And then I've got got a couple of Vox wahs. I like those.
Uh-huh.
I haven't played any of the recent ones, so I can't speak to, you know, what they are now.
Right.
But the ones I have are probably about 15, 20 years old. And one...
Don't you have a 60s?
Well, that was the one...
Oh, it's the Crybaby.
Jeff gave me, It's like a 69. And then one of the Voxes, Lyle Caldwell of Sonic Audio, modified for me and put a, you know, an input for, you know, the power supply and all that stuff. Put a buffer in it, which I generally don't like buffers, but his are pretty good.
Yeah.
And that one's great for touring, because it's pretty tough and it can take it. And, you know, when you play in the Enormo domes, you've got this loom that runs from your board, and your amp can be anywhere from 20 feet to 100 feet from you.
Yeah. Right.
You know, so you have to, you know, running all that cable,
you know, it can really
kill your signal. And, the buffer helps like lower the capacitance and, you know, all that stuff. So, but I like that to be, If there's a buffer, I would rather it be later in the signal path. I want the guitar to kind of get through most of the pedals before it gets to any kind of buffering. You know.
Well, there aren't a lot of things on your board, and there's the few things in the Univibe.
Univibe. Yeah. I've always had some kind of Univibe.
I just won't use one of those because that's your thing. I just can't use it.
Yeah.
Like, I've known
and
you
the
for
thing
so
that's
long.
Funny is I like those things for several different sounds, not just the one Hendrix style, you know, Star Spangled Banner sound, which I love. I use that a lot.
Right.
But I actually like, it has this, vibrato setting as well as the chorus style Hendrix thing. Yep. It has this vibrato setting, which is great because you get this, it almost sounds like an Andy Summers kind of chorusy sound, but it's cooler to me. It's got this heat to it.
Yeah.
It makes the sound a little more red, with, the color around whatever you're playing tends to be more red with that.
See, I understand that. I don't know if some people may not, but I see sounds and songs as colors and shapes.
Right.
I always have.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the thing. Like with perfect pitch, with synesthesia, I don't hear, don't just hear notes. I see them. You see things and you can, you know, but with music, it should be that way. You should be able to, even if you don't have synesthesia or perfect pitch, you could still listen to music and hear the story and see it in front of you, see the movie, you know, let it make the movie for you. But yeah, so I mean, it does that, but I do like that kind of washy, thing. You know, again, it's the dragon attack, you know, attacking the village thing, just pure, unmitigated, just violent storm.
Right.
You know, I mean, the thing that's cool is that sometimes you want that and you want that power of the hurricane thing, but sometimes I use the same exact stuff to make, you know, really pretty things out of it, you know, and make it, you know, so a lot of it is in you. A lot of it is find the stuff that you're comfortable with and the way that, you know, you think it should sound coming out of your speakers. But it really does come a lot from, there's not a statement on earth I probably hate more than tone is in your hands, you know? And it's because it's misused and overused and used to talk down to people, and I think that's really shitty. There is a truth in that, and I don't think people quite understand what it means, which is that you're going to sound like you no matter what.
Right. Yeah.
You know, Jeff Beck and Brian May are going to sound like Jeff Beck and Brian May no matter what they plug into. Now, Brian May plugging into, you know, a fucking deluxe reverb reissue with no pedals and nothing is going to sound like Brian May playing guitar.
Right.
It's not going to sound like three AC30s on 10.
Yeah, right.
Fucking treble booster running through it. Yeah, you know, that's a different thing, you know?
Yeah.
There's that. But the big thing is finding stuff that just gets your guitar through the amp in a way that you can enjoy. But letting you kind of be the thing that makes the difference, you know? I said, I use a lot of the same shit for everything and play a lot of different styles of music with it. And, it really comes down to dynamics, you know, being able to learn to work the stuff you have. And that's why I like the gear that I have, is that it allows me that dynamic push and pull.
Yeah.
You know, I can play really softly and whatever, and it'll sound soft. And I can play very violently and it'll sound violent. I can play very singy, you know, very lyrically, and it'll sing. And it'll sustain and be big and beautiful and violin-y or whatever. But it really does come down to finding the stuff that lets you do that.
Right.
You know?
Well, you've inspired me I've always enjoyed the simplicity of your rig and that a lot of, you know, a lot of what comes out of you is you, you know, is we were saying, like the way you work the stuff that you have. And it's a very simple setup, which is cool. And I started out with gigantic racks of shit, like, you know, maybe some of the people out there have, and lots of atmospheric kind of stuff. I was in a three-piece band, so I needed to fill a lot of sonic landscape. And when I moved to Nashville, I started to see when I got on the road, started to see a lot of other guys with these enormous, like enormous pedal boards. Yeah. And I'd always kind of thought in my head, like, oh, it'd be cool to have a board like that. And I could do this and this and this. I could be the Edge. It'd be cool. I can have. And once I started to see that a lot of the guys out there, and maybe this isn't so much the case anymore. I don't know who's using what or who's doing what. And not to diss anybody and not to diss anybody,
but I'm totally going to diss some people.
No, it's not that. It's just that, you know, I started seeing the same boxes on everyone's board.
Well,
like,
no, I mean, but that's actually, you know, there's a reason for that. You know, there's a safety in using what someone else is doing, you know, and that's fine. Right. Honestly, you know, the thing is, not everyone's a composer. And so those right. people play other people's music, whether it's backing yeah. up someone in an arena or playing in a cover band on weekends.
Sure, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
You're
yeah.
doing yeah. that. And so you tend to try and find the things that get the sounds that you think are appropriate for that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Or if you're playing someone's hit song with them on the road, you know, you want to try and get right. that as close as you can.
Let's use that as a springboard to talk about the Jonathan Davis thing, because you started playing with Jonathan Davis. Most people listening probably know that already, but Jonathan Davis, being of Korn.
He is a being of Korn.
He's a being of Korn. Yeah. He's made out of pure Korn.
Or as we call it, maize.
Maize.
With a backward Z, yeah.
In having to... let's bookend what I was saying before about, like, seeing everybody with all these enormous pedal boards and whatnot, and then, you know, having played with you for so long and enjoying the simplicity of your rig and the, you know, again, some of these things I don't want to piss you off, but like the purity of what you are, there's a lot of purity in the way you approach things, and it's and I don't know if that's the right way to put it, but that's a compliment. Hope you're taking that as a compliment.
Of course, yeah. We're talking about me. All of this is a compliment.
This is great. But it made me kind of, you know, want to go in that direction myself, to try to say, okay, can I do the gig that I'm playing with these four pedals? Like, can I? Because I'm in a position now too in my current gig where, you know, lots of songs are getting thrown my way with. You know how the Nashville production machine works. There's all sorts of, there may be a verse with like a rotary sound on it, and then there's a brief 2 second thing in this one song that has this thing on it and that thing on it. And I've kind of, I guess you could go one of two directions with that. You could go, I'm going to try to duplicate this exactly and make this exactly as the record is. But I think that kind of eliminates that. Then you're not really playing live. You're just kind of like,
you're still playing live. You still have to do it and not fuck it up.
Well,
I mean,
right,
people get paid, you know, around here to go up and play with people to play the parts that may or may not be difficult. But the thing is to not screw up when you're on live TV.
Right. Yeah,
you know, that's what you're getting paid for. Like everyone sitting at home that thinks that that's easy, you know, walk out in front of 100,000 people for the first time in your life and think that that's easy.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
So, these things that are so simple sitting in your bedroom suddenly become a lot more.
Well, there's a huge difference. Yeah, there's a huge difference between sitting down and doing that in the privacy.
But, you know, the thing is, it really isn't. It's all in your head, but that's a whole other thing. I kind of know what you're getting at. I mean, there are two ways to approach when you're playing with someone else, you know.
Like, and I guess when you finish this, I want to bridge into the Jonathan Davis thing and ask you how you went about approaching this gig where you had a bunch of songs that were already on a thing that were already done and finished, and how you went into it, like what your approach was when you said, okay, I have to put together the live version of this thing. Like, how am I going to do it?
Yeah. Well, that's kind of what I was going to say.
Okay.
So when you have, there are two ways of looking at it, and I tend to go with option two, and I go with option two now. I've done option one and was miserable and hated my life because that's not who I am. And but the other people, there are other people who do it, and I'll explain what option one is, which is you're going to do the thing you're talking about, which is you're going to sit down and learn every note on the record exactly as it's played or as close to it as you can.
Right.
You're going to try and match the sounds, and it's going to be, you know, you're going to go out and tour and play with whomever you're playing and really nail down those things. And I have friends that do that, and they're great people, and they do a great job of it, you know? Unfortunately, I'm cursed with this really weird thing about, I play guitar, but, and I do, I have a love affair with the guitar, and it isn't part of my body, but I see it as a part of my body. It's not who I am. I'm a composer. Mm-hmm. I'm an improviser. I make music. And so that goes counter to sitting down and doing something that someone else has done and being happy doing only that for the rest of my life. I would, there's no way I could do that.
Yeah.
That's why I'm not doing Tonic anymore. That wasn't a, you know, I love those guys, but it wasn't for me.
Right.
You know? With anyone that I'm going to work with, it's going to sound so fucking arrogant, but it's just the truth. That's all it is. And it's just because I have to live with me and be happy. Anyone that I'm going to work with in the future or now or whatever, I need to be a part of the creative process. I need to have, that was always the challenge for me, was finding a way to sneak in bits of who I am in the thing that I'm doing, whoever I'm working for. You know, and using basically the same stuff that we just talked about gear wise. And I could usually do that. So, with Jonathan, this thing with his record that's cool is that there's a bunch of different players, all of whom were great, including him, that played guitar on a lot of it.
Yep.
And, so the parts are interesting. And then, so another thing was that I loved the record the first time when Ray Luzier was putting the band together, he called me about it and, asked if I was interested, and I asked if I could hear the record first. And he was kind of taken aback, like, really? You didn't just jump at the chance to have this gig? You know, and I was like, I need to hear the music first. I've got to play it for however long this tour is or whatever, you know.
And, I think it was funny to me, on a side note, it was funny to me how delightfully oblivious you were to who Jonathan was or anything like that before going into it. And
I actually don't know who many people are. There are lots of people that I have no idea who they are.
Yeah, that always struck me as hilarious. But anyway, continue.
Which is a funny thing living in this town, because people are like, oh, and I have no idea what they're talking about.
So
I went over to his place and we listened. He played the, it was unfinished. It just wasn't mastered. It wasn't released.
Right.
And I was floored. I mean, it was beautiful.
Yeah.
And I was like, I could absolutely hear myself in this music, you know, easily. And, not because the guitar parts were something that I was like, oh man, I really want to play that guitar part. It was because this music is so great.
Sure.
I want to be a part of that.
Yep.
And, so one of the things that's been really cool is, well, first, technically I had to figure out how I was going to play all this stuff, because they used a lot of different, they would tune the guitar in different registers for different songs. So like if, like everyone, or not everyone. Yeah. Everyone. Everyone has this sort of cool, like, jackhammer part during the chorus where it's an open low C string, and it's like, right? Yep. And it's got this half step thing in the middle of it, but it's an open string on the record. Well, I figured out that if I had a 7-string guitar with a low A, so E to E, and then a low A on top of that, that I could play the entire set of music we were going to play with one guitar. And when you're touring, that's often a consideration. And not to mention when you're left-handed and, you know, like your 7-string options are limited. So if I did that, then I could play the whole thing with one guitar. And so some of these songs were interesting as from a challenge of finding a way to finger those things on a guitar that is not at all what was used for the record, you know. And like that tune in particular, I'm having to string jump, you know, those jackhammer picked parts from the low A up to the eight, the high A string. You know, it's like this really cool thing. And that actually ended up being, that's the second song we would usually do in the show.
Right.
And that was kind of my warm up, you know. I get through the first song fine without warming up. But then when we played that one, it was, my hands were alive and like, yeah, let's go beat up a cat, you know. But yeah, it's but that was really, it was the music. It was so the working out the part, and but the other part was that I could tell just from talking to Ray and listening to the record that this was a really open-minded, very creative guy. And that intrigued me. Right. And that has paid off because he is one of those people that just no idea is too weird to consider.
He's happy letting you do your thing. And
well, yeah, you know, he trusts me to do my thing, but play his music. You know, I'm not like stomping all of the music.
No, right.
Whatever.
You don't keep a gig if you're.
No, of course not.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've kind of been able to find my thing in that. So it's cool. And, you know, I'm playing with Brian Allen on bass and Ray.
Yeah.
Is really fun.
Yeah, like John, I said, I'm still jealous that you get to play with Ray Lazier every night. That's
he's pretty good.
That's pretty awesome. So, I guess in sort of wrapping it up, because I think that's been the quickest hour that we've ever done.
So amps.
Well, amps, but I wanted to talk a little bit about, like, I mean, you've done some cool things this year. What are a couple of your favorite you know,
I mean, the shows.
Yeah,
and stuff.
Sure. Like, what? Because you've played like all the major rock festivals. You've, you know, shared stages.
That's right,
with.
Michael.
That's right. You've shared stages with. Well, I'm trying to give the people that stuck through this gear talk.
Right.
a little something on the back end to, you know.
Yeah. No, wait, what?
I'm trying to give people something in their back end.
Yeah. No, it was cool. It was a good year. No, we, you know, New Year's Eve, we played the Forum with Ozzy and Marilyn Manson and Body Count and all that, which was really cool.
Yeah.
I mean, what? The Download Festival.
Has it all kind of run together
Paris
for us?
No. But you know me. Like, it's every gig we've ever done, I'll remember. But I couldn't tell you where it is half the time because,
sure.
I just, you know, you focus on the show and do the thing. And then, you know, when you get to hang out, like, you know, being in Europe was cool.
Yep.
I toured everywhere in the United States, but had never been to Europe. So that was really fun. And, you know, playing, you know, like the Rockheim Ring was awesome because that was at the Nürburgring. And then the Rockheim Park was interesting because that was the Nuremberg where Hitler, that's literally the place where Hitler had given a lot of they had the rallies and stuff. And
Jesus.
A friend of mine almost got arrested. And we climbed up on the thing and, you know, Everbodden, get down, you stupid American, you know. No, I'm playing. Italy was cool. You know, I'm part Italian. I think I'm the first person in my family in several generations to go back. Italy. Yeah. That was neat. And we went to Florence, played there with Iron Maiden, which didn't suck. They were awesome, by the way.
Yeah.
And, you know, we played Prague with... that was Ozzy, too. Yeah, it was Prague with Ozzy, but the Hollywood Vampires were there, so we hung out with Johnny Depp and Alice Cooper and, like, all these guys. And
yeah.
It's been an adventurous year.
Yeah.
It was cool.
Well, I think one of the funniest conversations I had was with Tom Hurst before all this shit happened, like before you went out, Tommy and I were, cause Tom has his finger on the pulse a little bit more than most, I guess. Like he's listens to all sorts of stuff and, you know, and I knew a lot about Korn, you know, I don't know. You're in this delightful little bubble sometimes where, like, you know, I ask you about something.
I've still never heard Korn.
Well, right.
No, that's not true anymore, though, because I've heard unfinished Korn at the studio that they're working on right now, but didn't have any vocals. So
Tommy and I were talking
yet.
About it because I remember talking to you and you kept saying things like, well, you know, like when this thing's over, when this gig ends and I was like, it kind of a little light bulb went off and I was like, I don't think he knows like how big a thing this is. Not to blow it up and whatever.
No. But I mean, the thing was, you know, when we were first talked to about doing it, I'm not referring to me as the royal we, I'm talking about the guys in the band.
Sure.
That we were told that it was a 3-month tour and that was it.
Yeah,
it was
we're
doing a band for this tour.
Yeah.
And, so we did the 3 months, and towards the end of the 3 months, they were talking about doing another couple of months or whatever.
Sure.
And so it ended up being kind of an all-year thing.
Yep.
So that was why, you know, not the only reason, one of the reasons was that in my head, I was just doing this 3-month tour with them and that would be cool. And then it would be over and go to the next summer.
I remember telling you, like, we'll bring this full circle because in the ways that you've told me about guitar, I could tell you that I could say I told you so, because I was like,
you really did.
I was like, shit's gonna get really weird for you, and you were like, I don't know. And then when shit got really weird, you were like, Yeah, you're right. Yeah, shit you're got right. really fucking weird.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, in neat ways, you know, weird and
right.
really
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, yeah. No,
ways.
I don't mean weird yeah, in yeah. a bad way, but
yeah,
it's
no,
been
really cool.
Honestly, it's been so fun for me as your friend to watch it all happen
yeah.
and to see you, like, honestly, man, I don't know if this is where I get all emotional at the end of this whole thing. Mm. I've never seen you more comfortable on stage ever in my life. I've been yeah. to two of these gigs now, one in Atlanta and one here in Nashville. I've never seen you more comfortable. I've never seen you more in your own element.
Well, there's a reason for that, actually, because a lot of the gigs that I've done, you know, I've done this one gig with a prominent female artist where I was told not to move, not don't. Step away from your pedal board. Don't move.
Don't
do anything. You know.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's not like I'm running around like an insane person, but it is. It's really relaxed and fun. It's a show.
Yeah.
You know. It's
yeah, yeah.
it's great music, and it's I love playing with them. You know, we're all at this point kind of bandmates with that group.
Sure. Yep.
And
yep.
You know, it's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's been cool. It's been cool to watch it. It's been cool to, you know, I mean, you and I, you know, for anybody out there listening, it's no big secret, but you and I talk at least a couple times a day, and have for a while. It's, in fact, it's weird for me when we don't talk,
yeah,
you know, like if we go, you know, periods where we're not chatting, I'm like, something's not.
I was in Europe. I was like, Michael,
So, okay, so going forward, so you got a Power Triplets record coming out.
I have a Power Triplets record coming out, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Any minute now, Trip is going to finish the bass tracks on a couple tunes, and then we'll be done. And,
okay.
I mean, it's not, it's you know, basically an EP. It's, you know, five tunes, and
yeah.
But five of our tunes go a long way, so it'll be
yep.
good.
Yep.
And then... I'm working on music for Jonathan's new record. We're all, you know, kind of doing that.
Right.
And, you know, and probably going to get out and do kind of a solo record thing and maybe do some gigs with people who love me and are my friends because I can't pay them very much, but are yeah. great, great, great musicians.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so... But yeah,
cool.
So there are things.
Awesome.
There are things.
Yeah.
Oh, and also, we're going to work on a. I'm working over Charvel, trying to get them to do the prototype for my 7-string guitar.
Oh, right. The Chris Nick signature
yeah,
model.
Well, I don't know about a signature model, but something. A
signature model.
they're listening to this right now. Going, fuck you.
The Chris Nick signature model coming your way in 2019.
Only left-handed, only said no.
Coming to your house to kill your animals.
But I mean, I have some pretty strong ideas. I mean, believe it or not, I have some strong ideas about
you don't say.
Certain guitar design elements that I think that... That are kind of universal. They're, you know, mm-hmm. there are things I enjoy or dig or need or whatever
yep.
that work for me. But I think that it's like when you played that AJ Strat. You know,
yep.
it's the same thing of like, well, no, that's just a great guitar.
Yeah,
you know,
yep.
and there's a reason for that, and it's because the guy that did it understood that it's a cumulative thing. It's not just the one part that's going to kick it.
The
whatever.
Ecosystem,
it's
the, as
it's
you,
an
as
ecosystem.
You put it. Yeah.
yeah, it's
yeah,
all
yeah.
a you know, it all it's symbiotic. It all works together to make a great instrument. And so,
yeah.
So I think we're gonna work on some of that stuff.
Cool.
And but yeah, we'll see.
Well, you'll probably be on this thing again.
Okay.
Because let's
yeah,
be
yeah.
honest, you know, I'm over here.
It was good knowing you, man.
Yep. Hey, I'll see you sometime.
Hey, thanks.
See you sometime down the road.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thanks
You're
for
welcome.
Thanks
All
for
right.
thanks for chatting with me.
I love you.
I love you too.
I know.
That's creepy. Thanks for chatting with me in your house.
Oh yeah. Welcome to my home.
Thank you for welcoming
You've
me.
Been here a million times.
All right. All right. I hope you enjoyed my little chat with my friend Chris. Did we lose any of you? I hope not. If you stuck with us up to this point, then thank you so much for listening. You can catch Chris Nix on tour with Jonathan Davis and the Ministry from here on out, so go do that. It's an incredible band. If you or anyone you know is interested in advertising with us here at Turn It On, please drop us a line at mj at
MJ@TIOPod.com. That is MJ@TIOPod.com, and we will work something out to fit your budget. We also have a PayPal donation button at TIOPod.com. If you like the show and would like to help us keep the power on over here, why not consider dropping us a few bucks? You don't have to donate, but you'll make me so incredibly happy if you do. Also, give me a follow on the socials. I'm at Michael J. Music on Facebook and Twitter, and at Michael J. Official on Instagram. We are also Turn It On Podcast on Facebook. More coming your way very soon. The legendary Billy Sheehan is on next Monday's program. Yes, you heard that right. Billy Sheehan. I had an amazing talk with Billy at his home here in Nashville, and I can't wait for you all to hear it. Thanks again so much for listening, everybody, and I will catch you again next time here on Turn It On.